Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. First of all, thanks for downloading the show. It means a lot. Oh, yeah. If you download the show individually, please subscribe on iTunes. It would mean an awful lot. And also, say some nice things and get 5-star reviews and blah, blah. There's an algorithm that I don't exactly understand, but I know that it's very important. So all that good stuff, please. Okay, moving on. This show is our Monday show, which means a little bit of everything. I do the news with Esmeralda Leone. We talk about very important things like fried chicken, pets, and the anonymous group, whatever that may mean. Following that, Nathan Jurgensen and I talk about the role of technology at Occupy Wall Street and Occupy DC. It's not exactly what the media, whatever that means, whatever is being portrayed in the print publications and the news publications that you see, because I know all of our listeners are big print publication followers. Anyways, that's why you listen to podcasts like this. The final segment of the show, Peter Heineman and I discuss why we host an open mic, considering neither of us are stand-up comedians. So that's the show. Really quick plug for events this week. Tomorrow night, or tonight, when you're listening to this, today, Monday, November 7th, in Chicago, Illinois, at the Hungry Brain, will be 8x8, hosted by James Fritz, one of my favorite comics. He's got a new podcast out called You Could Be Dead, so go on iTunes and all that great stuff and find You Could Be Dead, hosted by James Fritz. He'll be at the Hungry Brain tonight hosting. We have stand-up, improv, readings, music, all that stuff's available at youmethemeverybody.com/events. The following night, Tuesday this week, Homeroom is back doing their lecture series. This time it's all about steampunk. So if you've ever wondered, why does this guy have a monocle on? It's 2011. Why am I speaking out loud and using the date? Because whenever you use the date, it sounds weird. That's why. You'll figure that out, and that's it. So without further ado, Esmeralda, Nathan, Peter, end of show, go out, explore the world, occupy, yes we can, 999, more slogans. Thanks for listening. Esmeralda Leone, how are you?
I'm good.
Fantastic. This is a podcast, which means we are obligated to do the news. What is the news this week?
Yeah, that's all podcasts are for.
Yeah. This is how you find out your daily news, the stuff recorded the night before.
Us. Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
A week later.
Yeah. Don't use Twitter. This goes up within like 2 hours, but still.
It's still old news.
It's in a podcast feed. I don't know when you listen to it, person, and I'm in your ears right now. I don't know who you are when this is. I'm assuming it's an iPod device. It could be a Zune. Anyways, do we have any Zune news?
Any Zune news? I don't have any Zune news. I got fried chicken news.
That's a good start. What's their fried chicken news this week?
Food and Wine magazine had a list of America's best fried chicken, and two places... They got two of them were Chicago spots.
All right.
Harold's Chicken.
Oh, of course. Have you had Harold's Chicken? Have we
had
it together?
You
had a wing? Are you kidding me?
At the Taste of Chicago many years ago. I don't even know why I still haven't eaten it.
That is depressing.
It was delicious.
Okay, this is what we're doing. In 2 weeks, I'll be in town in 2 weeks. We're going to go to Harold's. It doesn't matter which Harold's you go to. I've been to about 5 of them. There's like 20 of them.
They're all good?
Yes, they're all good. They're all the exact same recipe. It's fantastic. You get the mixed basket, and we'll do it up, and we'll talk about it on the show.
Can we drink champagne?
No. I've had it with champagne, and it's the worst with alcohol.
Champagne.
It's great to end the night or start the evening with beer, but not champagne and fried chicken.
I'll see. Okay. The second one was Crisp. I don't know if you've ever
Crisp
been there.
In Lakeview?
Yes.
Both of these I highly recommend for totally different reasons.
I've had Crisp many a time, and it blows my mind.
Isn't it the best?
So delicious.
Do you want to describe what it is to the listener at home?
It's Korean. It's Korean barbecue.
Yeah,
but it's not really barbecue in the sense of like grilling barbecue. Mm-hmm. It's just fried chicken with a delicious barbecue-esque sauce.
Delicious is the key word in that statement.
It's so good. Yeah. Have you had the? Do you do just the wings? Oh, and they're big ass wings.
Yeah.
Too.
I went there, I think the week before Kelsey moved to D.C. Kelsey moved out here about a month before I did. So we wanted to try, like, all these places in Chicago that we had never gone to. So we went to Crisp. The one and only time I was there, I think we ordered, like, an appetizer and two meals, which is unnecessary, completely unnecessary, because all of the servings are gigantic.
Yeah.
So we had three different types of chicken, and they were all amazing. The one issue you might have with Crisp, for those of you that haven't gone, is it's really greasy. Like... Know that going in, it's really greasy. It will hit you later.
I don't think it's that greasy.
It's not. You don't think it's that greasy?
It's not crazy greasy,
I
don't
think. You don't think it's greasy, but it's really crazy greasy.
Maybe it's because I always get, with the wings, always get a bibimbap bowl.
Yeah, we didn't do the bibimbap bowl.
And that rice just soaks up the grease in your belly.
That is true. What we did was we got the side of fries or whatever that comes with it.
Oh, see?
But it's like the garlic fries.
Too much grease there.
We didn't know that. The fries themselves aren't that garlicky, aren't that greasy.
No, I'm just saying you overloaded.
We definitely did. So you don't need a side when you go there. It's highly recommend that place. But those, I would agree with that.
Do the bibimbap, because then you get vegetables. You got a little spinach, some carrots in there.
Well, if I'm going to do that, why would I go to Crisp? Why wouldn't I go to someplace near your neighborhood?
Because you want the wings.
For those, could you explain what that is to people?
Good.
Because I'm sure a lot of people don't know what bibimbap is.
Oh, bibimbap is it's a rice dish.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think, cold. No, it's warm. The rice is warm.
The rice is...
The vegetables are marinated in, like, sesame and other things.
They're kind
they're
of pickled. Some of them are kind of pickled.
Yeah, pickled in a sense. There's carrots, spinach.
There's sometimes an egg.
Zucchini.
There is zucchini. There's an egg,
they
usually.
Do, yeah, and then the egg on top.
Yes.
Over easy.
It's usually economical.
It's really good.
Dish. It
I
is very, it. Very good. You mix it all together. You put a lot of sriracha and hot sauce on it.
So delicious. But those wings are amazing. And the list also had a few D.C. places, and I wanted to ask you if you had been
Shoot.
To any.
I would like to find out if I have.
So let's see. Birch and Barley.
No. Where is that?
It doesn't say.
Okay. Moving on.
I was hoping you knew.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Birch and Barley. They're actually the D.C. winners who... Her name is, or his name, Kyle Bailey.
Okay.
They won the Food & Wine's People's Best New Chef Mid-Atlantic, so you should probably check
them
out.
I will check out. Is it
and
beef?
They do walks.
Say it again.
Birch and Barley.
Birch and Barley. I'm looking it up right now on Yelp.
And the other one is this just, I think it's just called Central.
Oh, okay. And
he's the chef, superstar chef. They're mm-hmm. all superstars.
Yeah.
Michelle Richard.
Yeah, I have not been there for obvious reasons.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Citronelle.
No. I'm sorry.
That's the name of the space. It's French style.
Nope. I'm looking it up right now.
Get the takeout for lunch.
I don't live that far from it. You know, it's not that close either. It's maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles away, but it's a three-star, it's a three money sign thing on Yelp.
Oh, yeah.
Harold's is definitely a one, and the other one in Chicago is between a one and a two. So that.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends, but they're big-ass wings.
Yeah, and
it's
they're worth it.
Deal. And you can share. And...
Yeah, but those two places in D.C. are more high-end.
Yeah.
So, no,
those
I'm
the
good.
Only ones on the list from D.C. I didn't see the one I had. God, I don't know why I didn't look this up earlier.
It's okay.
But in Boston, when I went to Boston, there was this amazing fried chicken place. And it was in the middle of nowhere. It was like
mm-hmm.
John and I went. We went last month to Boston. And mm-hmm. I just read about this place. I was expecting a little restaurant, a little cafe, maybe, and it was just like a storefront. It had a little tiny counter where you could sit, and there were people sitting there, and it was a bit awkward because it was all neighborhood around us, so
yes.
There's really nowhere we could go to eat.
Yes.
We luckily were able, the people left who were sitting there before us, but the fried chicken was so good. It was like collard greens and fried chicken and... Oh, man, and cornbread, I was dying.
But you have no idea what the name of the place was.
I'm looking it up now.
Okay.
I can't remember it right now.
All right, we'll come back to it. What's the next
yeah.
story?
So we can relate to this one. Pets are no longer cheap and affordable as my cat tries to jump
that
on
the That is
rape.
True. Did we talk about that on the show? I don't think we did.
No, well, my cat just has, your cat has problems. My cat has
many
problems.
A problem. It's once every 2 months I seem to be in the vet with the guy.
Yeah, but there is an article that came out how it's risen by a lot.
Yeah.
That it's gone up 47% from a decade ago. So the average household spends $655 a year. Just, and this is for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it's gone 73% for cats.
It's how much for cats?
73%. It's gone up.
Okay, but how much is it for cats? It's $600 for dogs type of thing?
Yeah, so if that's 47% up.
But what is... Did they ever give
they
the number
give
for the
it.
Cat?
They don't give the...
That is really weird reporting.
But it's ridiculous. Well, it's Gawker.
Okay. Thanks to
and
Brian.
All Gawker does is
Bina.
Give that, and then they just make
Smart.
Jokes.
Yeah, I like it. I've spent at least $1,000 on the cat this year.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. I spent. Actually, I got lucky. The cat swallowed some yarn, and I think I only had to pay $500.
The fact that you said lucky, $500 in yarn in the same sentence is insane.
Yeah,
that's
no, I was
right.
expecting at least $1,000.
Yeah, that's insane.
And it came out like $400 or $500.
So dumb.
To save her miserable little life.
So for the dumbest
people.
As
she's attacking my blinds as we speak.
Fantastic.
Looking for some invisible.
If you knew how much the cat was going to cost, would you have taken the cat?
I think I still would.
Yeah, I think I would too. God, I'm.
I had a dog too that also had problems. They told us that it had anemia.
Oh, jeez.
And what was bad was he had a little spot on his nose, like a little white pink spot, and it would go white when he had anemia.
Oh, my God.
He didn't have any blood cells going or something. But oh, my God.
I hear your cat, actually.
Yeah, she just jumped on that bookshelf in the other room.
Fantastic.
Holy shit.
You have a lot of fun stuff to look forward to once we finish recording.
Yeah, she's been freaking out all day.
All right, what's the next news story?
Anonymous, you know Anonymous, right?
The film?
No, the internet group.
Okay, kind of. I've kind of been following this, but I kind of don't really know what's going on. And
I just see them as like punks.
Okay.
Just like smart online punks.
Okay.
Not even smart in the sense that they know what's best for them. Smart as in they just know how to make computer things go wrong.
Okay. So it's like a hackers type group. Yeah, God, I sound like, so dumb. We should probably just move on. What's the story?
They were doing a thing where they were going to reveal the names of people who are associated with a drug cartel.
Okay.
In Mexico. The Zetas.
Okay.
Who are extraordinarily the bloodier ones.
Okay.
They decapitate people's heads and such. So... The Zetas then heard that the Anonymous group was going to do this. Mm-hmm. So they said they're going to hire their own security specialists to find them and to retaliate physically, which means they'll probably chop their heads off.
That's nice.
So Anonymous is like, oh, okay, maybe we won't do that. See you later.
So this is the first time like nerds and drug cartels are ever going to be in the same place.
Yes.
That's
it just cracks me up that they have like these big balls. You know, they've been trying to knock down PayPal and MasterCard and Amazon. But when it comes to actual serious things...
Well, they're all serious. It's just one is more than willing to murder and talk about it.
PayPal isn't going to come after them in that sense.
How do you know PayPal isn't part of that drug thing group? Cartel.
It just cracks me up because now we know they're just frightened kids in their... parents' basement.
Why does everyone say parents' basements? I'm sure these people have very nice apartments.
Okay. They probably live in their little bedroom apartment.
I would love to be in my parents' basement. I wish my parents had a basement. I wish I had parents, okay? There's nothing wrong with a parents' basement. Let's take that off the table as an insult to people.
Well, I just don't like the fact that... I think they just freak me out.
What, people that live in parents' basements or drug cartels?
Anonymous.
Oh, Anonymous is the one that freaks you out. Okay.
And they freak me out in the sense that they do whatever they please.
Well, isn't that everyone ever?
No, but they'll just shut stuff down online for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
They'll just shut it down because they feel like it and they want to cause trouble.
Yeah, why not?
I just don't like that because that's a lot. I know I'm making fun of how little power they have because a drug cartel will chop their heads off, but they do have a lot of power in terms of internet things, and our lives are pretty much internet now.
I'm down with it. I'm cool with it.
I don't like it.
It's fine.
When John moved into where I live now as well, there was a card from Anonymous, like the people before us, I guess, had stuck it into the kitchen cabinets. And I found it, and it was just creepy, because it's like, we are here, but we are Anonymous. Wow. It's like, oh, God.
I mean, it's just a chain letter. You know what I mean?
It's just a bit a chain letter-esque.
Keep in mind, I have no idea what I'm talking about. So to the listener, I'm completely serious. I have no idea what this is. I've heard this in passing. Half the time it's a reference to the Shakespeare film. Half the reference is in reference to this type of stuff. I haven't done any research. I apologize in advance. I know it's a relatively important story. I think have something to do with Occupy.
I just think they're a bunch of punks.
Yeah, but once again, what's wrong with that?
I don't know. I don't like punks.
I like punks. They're all right.
I hate punks. I don't mean punks in that anarchist. Well, they are, I guess, anarchist, but they're more nerd. Like, I think punk, like you, like old people think of punks. Like, oh, you punk!
I'm fine with it, I think.
I really
don't know how this relates to anything.
Well, because they can shut.
But who is the they? You see what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. Anonymous is a lot of people everywhere. There's really no, they do kind of have an organization, but they don't. Because people can break off from them and people claim they're from them, but you know what I mean? It's not like you have a membership.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking up their Wikipedia page right now.
That this, I don't know, it creeps me out a little.
I'm cool with it. I don't really care. You know what I mean?
I don't like the power of the internet.
I like the power of the internet. This whole show, my entire livelihood right now is based on the power of the internet.
I know, but this is a whole different kind of power.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're going to be on their side. You just don't realize it.
Yeah, yes and no.
You're not rich, Merle. I'm sorry to... you're not.
I know,
so you're going to probably be on their side 90% of the time.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, whatever. I'm cool with it. Until they start screwing with mid-level comedy podcasts and entertainment talk shows.
What if they do just to do it?
Then we'll get press and it'll be fantastic. Problem. I don't see a problem.
And then you can't. Then you can't open your website up again because they shut it down.
Well, we still have a live show. I don't care. Then we'll start sending VHS tapes out. We'll be retro. I don't care. We'll figure something out.
I love this. We'll do cassette.
I've been watching way too much Doctor Who to get worried about random people hurting me. I have
enough. You're gonna wait for Doctor Who to come in.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, do I have a screwdriver? I could figure this out. It's fine. It doesn't matter. No matter what, it's fine. It's a very weird way to live.
It is.
So we got,
I worry too much, I guess.
You definitely do. No, I think I worry way more than you. Anyways, so that was a good three news story roundup. We did fried chicken, animals,
yes, by the way, it was Post Cafe.
Post Cafe was the one in
Post
Boston.
Post Cafe has some amazing fried chicken.
See, that's the 60 minutes episode that I want to see. I want to see a story about fried chicken, cats/dogs, and Anonymous. And I'm completely serious. I'll
probably do that. That actually sounds like a 60 minutes.
That sounds like a very good show. I think we did
Let's pitch that to them, and then they'll give us credit.
Yeah. We'll be the new Andy Rooney.
Yeah, because he's dead.
Yep, that is exactly why I said
that
last time.
It takes two of us
to equal one
Andy Rooney.
It's like five of us, just in terms of numbers of ages and stuff. All right, so tomorrow night is Hungry Brain. It is Hungry Brain, Jesus. Tomorrow night is 8x8 at the Hungry Brain, hosted by James Fritz. You haven't seen Mr. Fritz in a while, I don't think.
Yeah, I haven't.
And he has his new podcast out right now as we speak. It has premiered as of this week. It's called You Could Be Dead, and the first five episodes are up now. So go download those, friends of James Fritz and others. It's going to be a good show. We have two musical acts for the first time on 8x8, but they're going to bookend. It's going to be Rebecca Rigo opening and Eric from Intel Buildings closing. You got Renee Schultz doing some very funny stand-up comedy along with David Drake. Jeff Phillips is going to be doing a reading, and Strange Soldier. Too much alliteration on my end. We'll be doing some improv. And then the following night, this is very exciting. Homeroom is going to be back at the Hungry Brain. This time it's all about steampunk. Merle, do you know anything about steampunk?
I know very little other than that movie Steam Boy.
What was that?
It's an anime.
Oh, I don't know that.
That is steampunk.
See, if I don't even know what anime is.
I think he's riding around on some wooden ship or something.
And you can ask that question on Tuesday night at the Hungry Brain. No, that should be a very good show.
I can't wait to see all the mustaches and old-timey culottes.
Those exist, apparently.
I hope they wear old-timey culottes.
That's a very good name for a band.
Old-timey culottes?
Old-timey culottes. So that's it in the world of You, Me, Them, Everybody in terms of live events this week. I will be in Washington, D.C. watching the Bears play. And Merle will be at the Hungry Brain. And then following Tuesday and Monday...
watching real Bears play.
Ew. Okay, have fun with that.
Oh, I was thinking animals.
Oh. Huh?
I wasn't thinking the gay ones.
I was only thinking the gay ones, and I was all excited.
I was thinking real live bears.
All right, everybody. Yes,
can
we
do that?
Occupy. Have a wonderful night. Merle, say goodbye if you want to plug anything else.
Bye.
There you go.
All right. We are at is it Qualia?
Qualia Coffee.
Qualia Coffee in the Petworth neighborhood. Nathan and I are going to talk about something that he's sort of an expert about. It's about Occupy Wall Street, which is... become a favorite topic on this show, and it's specifically about the use of technology and the type of technology that's at the protest. So, Nathan, you were at Occupy New York, Occupy Wall Street. You've been to, I think, Occupy DC, or you're about to go. You're going again today. What is the predominant thing that you see? Is it a lot of iPhones, a lot of Blackberries, a lot of what?
Well, that's what I thought I would see. I thought I would go down to Occupy Wall Street and see a bunch of, everybody talks about, oh, there's a bunch of young kids, and they're all going to be on their smartphones, and people have lot of discussion in the blogosphere, not so much maybe in the mainstream media, but a lot of discussion on how social media was used to organize the Occupy movement. And then obviously there's the cell phone videos of police brutality. And so this is really a mobile phone, smartphone, social media, high-tech revolution and this and that. And so I went down to Occupy Wall Street, and one of the first thing that hit me was how few of the protesters really have cell phones that are charged, that they're using. Didn't see a whole lot of mobile phone use, and instead, I really got a sense that there was a vibe of low tech, of analog, of retro, vintage technology.
By necessity or by choice?
Yeah, I think that's the big question. Okay. So obviously, and then I ask a lot of people about this, obviously to use your cell phone, you need to charge your cell phone, and electricity is scarce in the park. There are newsstands and hot dog vendors that are pretty okay with letting people charge their phones there, because Occupy Wall Street's brought a lot of tourists. A lot of tourists means a lot of money. Selling a lot of hot dogs and newspapers. And so they're actually pretty friendly with the protesters. And who knows, maybe they're even politically aligned. That I don't know. There are a few generators in the park. There was five or six when I was there. The fire department has since taken them away in the last couple of weeks. They're gone, and that's a big fight to get those back. And so the generators really were to power laptops, webcam, so television. And then a couple of power strips to charge cell phones.
In terms of percentages, how many people do you think were using cameras, laptops, etc.?
Protesters, very few.
Okay.
Protesters, very few. And I talked to quite a few of them, as well as media and technology sort of figureheads, that they were there to talk to people, answer questions, information, things like that. And what I heard over and over again, I asked people, I notice you're not posting anything, you don't have your smartphone out. I notice a lot of people don't have smartphones out, and I ask why that's the case. And over and over again, I was told, well, it's not charged. It's okay. Not charged. And I got these two conflicting answers from people, and often from the same person. They would say, on one hand, I would be posting to Facebook. I would be tweeting on the hashtags, you know, the hashtag OWS and all that. But my phone isn't charged, on the one hand. And then on the other hand, sometimes in the same person, they would say, I don't need technology. I'm sorry, say that again. I don't need electricity.
Okay.
So if my phone was charged, I'd be on Twitter. And at the same time, I don't need electricity. Electricity is thought of as not necessary to the movement. The movement instead has a sort of analog feel to it, this low-tech feel.
Which is the exact opposite of the Arab Spring.
Right, well, I mean, I think this really calls into question the role of new media, of mobile phones. Of course, they were incredibly important. And there's the novelty aspect. This is new. But how much do we just have to be careful not to overstate the role of these new technologies, because they have the novelty of being new and exciting and transformative. And on Wall Street, it's clearly the case that that's a very small part of the story. And even a small part of just the technology story. Here's the sense I got. That Occupy Wall Street, the technology that's really important are humans. And that we've built a society where,
really quick. When you say humans, you mean humans at the actual Occupies, not the humans that are following it, not the humans that are the Facebook fan groups. You have to be there to be important.
Right. There's the physical bodies occupying physical space.
So it's about physical space.
Physical space, but also even outside of Zuccotti Park, are the actual human, or just human beings in general, socially, that we've built a society where, in some ways, humans are subservient to technology.
Okay.
Because of, let's say, consumer capitalism, we have to buy the new iPhone. That maybe Facebook and companies like Facebook and Google are monopolizing data, and in some ways we've become subservient to them. And I think there's a general distrust of the role of new technology in society and consumer capitalism, the way Google's monopolistic over our data, the way
So you're saying that that's what you're feeling, or that's what you're seeing, that's what you're seeing at the Occupy protests.
Yes, that was my sense. Now, protesters didn't tell me that very specifically. Uh-huh. This was this sort of larger critique of the role of technology and consumer capitalism and all that. That's not really something that was said very explicitly.
Well, I wonder how much this is just Wall Street versus the other Occupy versus the global scheme, considering that, what was it, November 5th was the big day. You pull out of your bank, you go to a local credit union, you go to a local something. And they already, in that one day, that was all of what was in 2010. Like, they actually did something. That was mostly based on what happened on Facebook and what happened through articles. How could you marry those two? Or can you?
Well, yeah, we can't just talk about, we can talk about Occupy Wall Street as that protest specifically, and it takes on a lot of different forms than does all the other local occupies, let's say, like D.C. One of the biggest things I noticed in Wall Street is, you know, one of the reasons why the protesters don't need to break out their mobile phones and take photos, look at our numbers, is because there are literally hundreds of tourists at any given moment, lots of them with their phones out and their cameras out, and they're just The protesters there are just being photographed nonstop from every angle all the time. So they don't really need to photograph and document what they're doing because there's tourists that are doing that for them.
What would you say the ratio is, tourist to occupier?
But it depends on the time of the day. You get there really early in the morning. It's mostly tents and tarps and bodies on the ground sleeping. Not as many tourists. It's a very somber.
This is both D.C. and New York.
New York.
Okay.
New York. But then during the day, they take down the tents. A lot of the people that slept overnight there, people look fairly grizzled and their clothes are torn up. They're gone in the afternoon. The tents are gone, and now there's a lot of tourists, and now that's the drum circle. There's horns playing. It's a party. It's a party during the day. And then it's a lot more tourists. And in those moments, the tourists do the documenting. They're the ones with the cameras out. They're the ones posting to Facebook. And in fact, you know, one of the ideas I had is that, you know, one of the most important technologies for those occupying Wall Street are the tourists. The tourists themselves are a technology. They've turned the tourists into Twitter. Instead of pulling out their phone and posting to Twitter, instead they pose for the tourists. The tourist takes the photo. The journalists are taking the photos, and they're the ones doing all the work of uploading. So instead of actually using the mobile phones, those occupying Wall Street just need to pose and be photogenic.
Okay. Where do you see technology going with this? It seems to be not a... No one really knows what's going to happen.
No.
And to pretend to predict what's going to happen overall is pretty insane. But we can predict what's going to happen with the technology. You said there's newspapers being printed and stuff like that. How could, like, that cost money? That's not free. Printing things isn't that cheap.
There was a Kickstarter. Yeah. They raised a lot of money.
So you're criticizing the technology that you're using to make the money to get the stuff that's not that technologically advanced. Does anyone see the irony in this?
Well, it's not ironic. I think they just have a very complicated relationship with technology, one in which they criticize some of the aspects of the way technology is in society, but at the same time embrace some of the aspects. Mm-hmm. So obviously, technology is very important in organizing the whole movement, and it's still going to be important. But I just think it's not just the high tech. It's also low tech. We talked about newspapers, drum circles.
Yeah, if people want to look at your photos, there's the bike generator. There's that whole, essentially, library there.
There's the library. So really a focus on analog and low tech. I think in there's an implicit critique of the way technology is in our society is that we always want the fancier, the shinier, the newer, the smaller, the faster, and that... what we've done with technology, at least since the 1950s, is planned obsolescence. It's throw it away. It's newer. It's faster. It's more. And they're saying, well, hold on. Low tech is important too, and you see that in many examples. So Brandon's referencing a blog post, and we can link to it maybe.
It'll be linked in the episode, so you don't need to go search it.
Yeah. Should I read out the URL character by character?
Why do people always go http? Colon.
www. No. If you just say something.com, I know how to get there.
Yeah.
Or you can just say the something. Google's good, too. So
unless you're at Occupy, then we're in a text from 1954 that's outdated, and you're whatever. Go ahead.
Okay. So in any case, so there's a blog post, and some of these thoughts are in there, but as well as some photos, as I that I took documenting the different types of analog, retro, low-tech, vintage that you see at the park. And I think that's a story that hasn't been discussed enough.
All right, so Peter and I have just left the Quick and the Damned open mic. The open mic we co-host with Eric Ziegler. We are in Peter's car, and he is driving me home. A total of one train step away. So, Peter, the reason why I want to record this with you is you are not technically a stand-up comic.
I'm very funny, though.
You're very funny. I would disagree. You say, pretty much, why do you do this? Why do you want to host an open mic? I like to host an open mic so I can try out new monologues and see new comics.
Right.
What's your reason to host an open mic?
Well, first of all, I just really love comics. I love comedians. I like to support them and all that kind of stuff.
That's stupid.
And that's not stupid. I think that's really, I don't know. I'd say that's like my primary thing. So.
To support comedy.
Yeah, to like, and also just to like get to know comedians in DC and you know, like learn, like find out about new acts and stuff like that, because I do like produce shows and stuff like that. That was my original intent to have an open mic.
Have you ever hosted an open mic before?
Yeah.
Where?
I hosted one at the Velvet Lounge. That was the first place that I hosted an open mic.
How did that go?
It went really good. That was the part of the reason that I, still do it, because it was such a great experience, even though we only did a couple of shows. But it was so great, and like all these people came out of the woodwork, because DC is such a fucking barren town for comedy. You know, there's literally zero. Guess how many sketch performances there are.
Zero. I'm gonna go zero.
There's zero. There's like not even like a single sketch troupe in the entire town.
Is that what you want to be
like,
doing?
That's what I really love.
Sketch.
Yeah, I really like. I think that's what I like more than anything else. But I think that like takes a lot of forms, because I'm not really. I mean, like if there was a UCB here or a, you know, whatever, a People's Improv Theater, or, you know, or whatever.
Well, there's a Wit.
They do like a tiny little bit of sketch and it's terrible. But they
so you're not into improv.
No, I don't really like it. I mean, I've done improv. I enjoy it, but I don't, like, love it. I think it's fundamentally, like, the whole thing is, like, are they going to fail? No, they kind of succeeded in that.
Okay,
why.
Okay.
I think it's funny. So that's fine, but that's not, like, you know, to me, it's, like, you know, what I'm really into is, like, fucking really weird shit, so.
Have you found anyone at this open mic that you wouldn't have seen besides this?
I like that guy, No, so not Sean Joyce.
Sean Joyce.
I liked him because he has like a style. It's like
okay. He
mutters, and he's like he's laconic. I think that shit is really good. Let's see who else. There was a Tasha. I think her name was. She was
okay.
Just like a really great, like really really clever, like kind of relationship comic. But she was like fucking really clever.
But those are both stand-ups.
Yeah. You know, that's okay. I mean. What do you want me to talk about Adam some more?
No.
I just like also like it's just a, I now that I've been doing it for like almost a year.
What is it?
Like hosting various things as opposed to just, you know, writing funny stuff, or you know.
So how did you get involved in the comedy scene?
This is like an interview with me.
What was that a problem? What did you think we were going to be doing?
One of the most important technologies for those occupying Wall Street. Are the tourists. The tourists themselves are a technology. They've turned the tourists into Twitter. Instead of pulling out their phone and posting to Twitter, instead they pose for the tourists. The tourist takes the photo. The journalists are taking the photos, and they're the ones doing all the work of uploading. So instead of actually using the mobile phones, those occupying Wall Street just need to pose and be photogenic.
Okay. Where do you see technology going with this? It seems to be... No one really knows what's going to happen.
No.
And to pretend to predict what's going to happen overall is pretty insane. But we can predict what's going to happen with the technology. You said there's newspapers being printed and stuff like that. How could... Like, that costs money. That's not free. Printing things isn't that cheap.
There was a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
They raised a lot of money.
So you're criticizing the technology that you're using to make them money to get the stuff that's not that technologically advanced. Does anyone see the irony in this?
Well, it's not ironic. I think they just have a very complicated relationship with technology, one in which they criticize some of the aspects of the ways technology is in society, but at the same time embrace some of the aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, technology is very important in organizing the whole movement, and it's still going to be important. But I just think it's not just the high tech. it's also low tech. We talked about newspapers, drum circles.
Yeah, to if people want to look at your photos, there's the bike generators, that whole essentially library there.
There's the library. So really a focus on analog and low tech. I think in there there's an implicit critique of the way technology is in our society is that we always want the fancier, the shinier, the newer, the smaller, the faster, and that... what we've done with technology, at least since the 1950s, is it's planned obsolescence. It's throw it away. It's newer. It's faster. It's more. And they're saying, well, hold on, low tech is important too. And you see that many examples. So Brandon's referencing a blog post, and we can link to it maybe.
It'll be linked in the episode, so you don't need to go search it.
Yeah. Should I read out the URL character by character?
Why do people always go HTTP? Colon.
www. No. If you just say something.com, I know how to get there.
Yeah.
Or you can just say the something. Google's good, too. So
unless you're at Occupy, then we're in a text from 1954 that's outdated, and you're whatever. Go ahead.
Okay. So... In any case, so there's a blog post, and some of these thoughts are in there, but as well as some photos that I took documenting the different types of analog, retro, low-tech, vintage that you see at the park, and I think that's a story that hasn't been discussed enough.
All right, so Peter and I have just left the Quick and the Damned open mic. We co-host with Eric Ziegler. We are in Peter's car, and he is driving me home. A total of one train step away. So, Peter, the reason why I want to record this with you is you are not technically a stand-up comic.
I'm very funny, though.
You're very funny. I would disagree. You say, pretty much, why do you do this? Why do you want to host an open mic? I like to host an open mic so I can try out new monologues and see new comics.
Right.
What's your reason to host an open mic?
Well, first of all, I just really love comics. Of comedians, I like to support them and all that kind of stuff.
That's stupid.
And that's not stupid. I think that's really I don't know. That I'd say that's like my primary thing. So.
To support comedy.
Yeah, to like, and also just to like get to know comedians in DC and find out about new acts and stuff like that because I do like produce shows and stuff like that. That was my original intent to have an open mic.
Have you ever hosted an open mic before?
Yeah.
Where?
I hosted one at the Velvet Lounge. That was the first place that I hosted an open mic.
How did that go?
It went really good. That was the part of the reason that I still do it, because it was such a great experience, even though we only did a couple of shows. But it was so great, and like all these people came out of the woodwork, because D.C. is such a fucking barren town for comedy. There's literally zero... Guess how many sketch performances there are.
Zero. I'm gonna go zero.
There's zero. There's like not even like a single sketch troupe in the entire town.
Is that what you want to be doing?
That's what I really love.
Sketch.
Yeah, I really like. I think that's what I like more than anything else. But I think that like takes a lot of forms because I'm not really. If there was like a UCB here or a, you know, whatever a People's Improv Theater or you know or whatever.
Well, there's a Wit.
They don't just they do like a tiny little bit of sketch and it's terrible. But
so you're not into improv.
No, I don't really. I mean, I've done improv. I enjoy it, but I don't like love it. I think it's fundamentally like the whole thing is like, are they gonna fail? No, they kind of succeeded, and that's
okay.
Why
okay,
I think it's funny, so that's fine. But that's not like you know. To me, it's like you know what I'm really into is like fucking really weird shit. So,
have you found anyone at this open mic that you wouldn't have seen besides this?
I like that guy. Sean Joyce.
Really. Sean Joyce.
I liked him because he has like a style. It's like
okay.
He mutters, and he's like he's laconic. I think that shit is really good. Let's see who else. There was Tasha. I think her name was. She was just like a really great, like really really clever, like kind of relationship comic. But she was like fucking really clever.
But those are both stand-ups.
Yeah. You know that's okay. I mean. What do you want me to talk about Adam some more?
No.
I just like also like it's just now that I've been doing it for like almost a year.
What is it?
Like hosting various things as opposed to just you know writing funny stuff, or you know.
So how did you get involved in the comedy scene?
This is like an interview with me.
What, was that a problem?
I thought we were...
What did you think we were going to be doing?
I had like a whole character that I was going
to... Okay, we're not doing characters. You love characters way too much.
I was going to do like a character of like a gruff sea captain.
You've been doing a character all night. You came to the open mic from yoga class, and you've been doing a yoga character all night.
It's been so great. It's been so great to watch you hate
it. You got zero laughs.
I got some laughs in the beginning, and then it just went...
It was awful. You kept... You were like a mad TV sketch.
It was... Come on. I got laughs. People who laugh at mad TV sketches.
Exactly. All eight of them.
I got zero laughs from you.
I'm laughing at you.
I said Bikram was the world's most dangerous yoga. That's pretty funny.
Okay. What made you initially inspired to be in the comedy scene? Because you have a full-time job. Yeah. You are in a relationship. You are not some... No, let's... This
not
is
not pathetic.
You're not pathetic at all.
Well, I mean, that's...
I don't think you're pathetic.
You just don't know me that well, but...
Fair enough.
I got started, I guess, because I did a podcast for about 4 years. I did a podcast, like... You know, well, back when most of the only people doing podcasts were, like, nerds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just me and my friend Rashid talking. It's called Cro-Magnon Jazz.
But you and Rashid kind of stopped doing that podcast.
We stopped doing it just because, you know, we kind of were like, well, that's enough of that. Like, you know,
okay.
Like, or like, at least I was. I just, you know, we just did it for a long time and it wasn't really going places. And I wanted to kind of focus more on, you know, comedy that was more than just sitting around in a room shooting the shit. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Kind of stuff. I mean, I like that stuff. That's still a lot of my favorite.
You were the guy that turned me on to Two Guys On. And that all that is Two Guys Shooting the Shit.
Yeah. Well, did I tell you... Well, I mean, we don't probably shouldn't talk about podcasts because this is an open mic interview. Isn't that
either way, it doesn't matter.
Well, you know...
Go with the conversation.
Yeah, Dude. It's like really probably the best... Two Guys Shooting the Shit.
Okay. Oh, yeah, dude, it's a very good show, and I had it on my iPod for the longest time, and I only listened to it.
Yeah, that's the thing about
it. Until I was in the car with you, and now right. I listen to it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I just think it's, you know, there's definitely a lot to be... So anyway, my point is I really like that stuff. But I just was, I just really think there's a lot of other stuff to be done besides that, and so that's what I'm trying to do now.
But how does this open mic relate to comedy podcast? How does this relate
to
where
to,
you
like,
started?
Try, I mean, just like getting up on stage and trying any strange thing that comes into my head.
Okay.
You know, whether it's, you know, a guitar thing or a...
Yeah, you've been playing my guitar for months at this point.
Yeah, well, you keep leaving in my car.
I do keep leaving in your car.
Because you don't have a car.
I don't have a car. Right.
You don't have a job.
That's... Fuck off, man! What are you doing?
I'm turning the tables.
I noticed. Are you happy that you're doing this?
Yeah, of course.
Not of course, because you don't come to a lot of these open mics.
We missed a couple when I was like out of town and stuff, and you know. But yeah, no, I'd do it every night if there was a space that didn't suck. I mean, the problem is like most open mics are like so depressing because everyone's like doesn't want to be there, and everyone is just like, yeah, I'm just gonna try these jokes out, and like other comedians are like, fuck you, basically. And you know, I don't know. I feel like that's like a lot, at least in DC, like that's like what happens a lot. And the host is always so fucking awkward. And you know, the host is always like not about being a host. They think they're a stand up and they're
trying. Well, let's focus on this. We're both hosts.
Yeah, but neither one of us is a stand up, so we're not.
Well, Eric is our other host, and he's a stand up.
Yeah, well, he, you know, he wears a suit.
He does wear a suit.
So that's kicking it up a notch.
All right, so suits is what really matters for us.
I think the main thing is that, you know, we all, you know, really genuinely like comedy and like watching comedy, you know, and we'd laugh. Is my light? I have no... There's like
no,
three
this,
lights.
No, your light is red still.
The one that's pointing the wrong way?
Yeah, yeah. Your light's pointing in a skewed direction.
This is
incredible. Let's date this for everybody. It's 11-11 on 11-1-11. Weird. And no, it's not weird at all. It's just a time. And
no, that is weird, dude.
No, it's... Shut up! Jesus!
Wait a minute.
We're on the corner... Where are we? We're on the corner of almost... 18th and on you.
Okay, so now the light that you said was mine is
that's
green,
your light.
And there's 100
that is your light. You're good.
People driving.
There were two cars. Exactly. A total of two cars. You're good. Okay. And then take a right at this light. You have the single. Exactly.
We're driving through Adams Morgan, motherfuckers.
That means nothing to anyone.
Suppers, bros.
So are you glad you're doing this open mic? You don't seem to be...
Skater character.
You don't want to necessarily be...
I'm glad. I'm very glad. I like... You know, Sally's is a place that's... I mean, are we talking about Sally's?
Sure, why not?
Because it's like one of these places that where there's been an open mic for like forever in DC.
Yeah.
And it's always been like kind of depressing. And it's still kind of depressing.
Why is it depressing? Because I think...
It's just like a depressing kind of place. It's dirty.
We used to be at Asylum. Yeah. To me, that was depressing. Asylum is a bar that is
well,
a pseudo-metal bar, which is now closed.
Yeah. Well, it used to be the Asylum, not that anyone could possibly give a shit about this, but that used to be, like, the only punk rock biker bar in D.C.
And yeah, and who cares?
It was really awesome.
But now we're at Solly's, and ever since we've been at Solly's...
It's really great. It's just, like, relaxing, and, you know, people know what's going to happen, that it's going to be crazy, and there's going to be, you know, we're going to make fun of the comics, and, you know, we're going to talk shit during it. But we're going to pay attention, and we're going to listen, and we're going to be, like, active. And
yeah.
We're going to keep people at least, like, at very least, like, you know, when I'm doing my hilarious yoga characters or whatever.
Yeah, hilarious.
Just amazingly funny yoga-based characters.
How hot do you keep your car? This is, like, 80 degrees in here.
Dude, you don't understand Bikram yoga at all. Dude.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's about the
final two questions. What is the one piece of advice you have for an open mic comic?
Oh, an open mic comic or an open mic host?
Comic. Host a second.
Okay, all right. Open mic comic. Number one, you've probably said this before. Don't fucking say anything about how embarrassing it is that you're in an open mic. I can do that. We can do that. We're hosts. But don't do that as a comic. Nobody gives a shit.
Okay.
Nobody gives a shit how few people there are in the crowd or like...
Just pull over here.
Whatever is happening.
Final advice for a host.
Oh, didn't give my... You wanted two pieces of advice.
Okay, continue.
I'm trying not to hit this fucking insane person on a bike. Oh, and then I ran into a curb instead. The other advice for a comic, for my comics is just fucking, you know, wing it. Just try it out.
So like, try...
Be willing to, it's at the same time that you shouldn't say, like, oh, it's, there's, like, five people and, like, or whatever. Like, oh, also don't do crowd work because they're all comics and they'll be up on stage in 5 minutes.
I would disagree. I think the crowd work is the best stuff. Like, Ruth Rasby, great comic. She did a minute of crowd work. She usually gets 5 minutes, and that was really, really strong stuff, and I think she actually might have a bit out of that 1 minute of crowd work.
Okay, that's a good point. What I meant was don't, like, I feel like a lot of comics somehow assume, that, like, that people in the crowd aren't comics.
Okay.
And start saying things about them, like, look at this guy over here, as if they're not going to be on stage in 5 minutes.
Got it.
You know what I mean? Like, just, you're not in the improv, dude. Like, just, you know, fucking give it in your pants for a second.
All right. So try new stuff and don't work the crowd.
And so the other thing, I guess.
And then for hosts.
My advice for hosts is just be nice to people.
So that's the exact
don't
opposite
be awkward.
Of me. I'm not awkward.
Right. That's the other thing. You don't have to be nice. You can, I mean, listen to the thing. You may not be. Yeah, you're nice. Come on, don't fucking bullshit. No, you're like playing up your own fucking image here.
I don't think I am. I think
you're not. You're. I mean, if someone's like a piece of shit, you will tell them, and I won't do that. But
yeah, that needs to be said.
Racist or something. Like,
if it's something racist, homophobic, or sexist, right. I will fucking go up there and say it.
I respect you for that. I probably would too. But like, or I'd probably make fun of them subtly so that they're too, or just be like, what the fuck was that? But
you wish you said what the fuck was that. You've never said that in your life.
I did.
On a mic.
Dude, remember that fucking Asylum where the dude got out into the crowd and started walked out into the crowd and told like a 20-minute tale about lesbians or wet marriage or something. Lesbian marriage. That was the worst thing I've ever seen. And I think I like got up there and was like, so whatever that was.
See, you just referenced it in an abstract. I could go, that man, whoever, I'm assuming it was a man, is an awful human being. Let's take the microphone from him.
This guy, one time in an open mic, I was there with my girlfriend, Erin Ryan, who's a very funny comedian.
She's in the City Paper this week.
Is she?
Yeah, I put her in.
For what? For being in?
She had an Occupy joke.
Oh, yeah. I gotta check it out.
Yeah.
She's following this guy, and this guy was like, it was like obviously his first time, so everyone's like, all right, good for you, buddy, good for you. And he gets up there and he like pulls out a piece of paper, I'm like, okay, all right, you know, go ahead, read your thing, man, you're fine. He's like, you know, maybe like 38, this guy, and he starts telling this interminable joke where the entire premise of the joke was lesbians are ugly. It was the entire premise. It was like as if a lesbian was like, you know, trying to come on to me. And it was like the whole premise of the joke was lesbians are ugly. And
did you say anything?
No, I was not the host.
Oh, okay.
I was not the host. I was just there. And I was like, But first of all, that's factually untrue. There are a lot of really hot lesbians. So, like, that's the main thing that you can't tell a joke about is something where everyone's just like, that's wrong. So, like, even if it wasn't, like, it wasn't that it was offensive, it was just that everyone was just like, no, there are plenty of hot lesbians.
Okay.
So, Erin got up on stage, and, like, the first thing, she was like, so, I'm straight, everyone, relax. Relax. I'm not
a lesbian.
Okay,
so she referenced it, but it's the host responsibility.
If I was the host, I would have done the exact same thing. It was perfect. It, like, called him out and let everyone know. Like,
but don't you see that
we're moving on from that? That's the thing is, if you can't dwell on it, you have to move on. That's the whole thing about the host. Keep it moving.
The host responsibility.
You can tell a joke, but it's got to be real fast. And you can do something, like, terrible. Nobody cares if you're bad, as long as you're like, nah, that was bad. And then you move on. Like, you just can't occupy the stage.
That guy, I'm assuming it was a dude, guy should have been squashed by the host because the stand-up following
the
that
host
guy,
did say something like, well, I don't know what the fuck that was. But, you know, he said the same kind of thing.
If it was a better host, the comic after him would not have to follow
that's
it
a good point.
And eat up their time.
I won't say where it was, but the host is pretty
where
bad.
Was it?
The host was terrible.
Who was the host? Let's name names.
No, I'm not going to do that.
All right, fine. End of interview.